This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream live from anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is producing the program for us. Good day, George.
Good day, sir.
My company, as he is every Tuesday and Friday here on the program, is, of course, the host of VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast. Also, VSiN's Betting Tailgate shows weekends, 9 a.m. Central Time. Check all your listings. Also, the host of VSiN Primetime, airing weeknights. Download the VSiN Watch app. Check out Sharp Week on VSiN. He's on Twitter, on X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir. I was making sure I got your plugs in.
Continue. What else we got? Yeah, I will just make this mention. If you've listened to this program, heard me, everything we've got to offer over at VSiN right now is free. So check it out. See what we have to offer. And if you think we stink, well, it's free. So check it out.
No harm, no foul. Let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program. So I took some notes last night from the Grizzlies game, and I just wanted to fire off a few. You know, normally Monday's Overreaction Monday. We'll just say these are tasty takes because it was all-encompassing from everything in the world of sports. I was very glad because when I left the station after the morning show, I'm like, oh, my God, other than the Grizzlies, what am I going to talk about? And then I just started sitting down and just firing off takes. And so I thought I'd just sound them off of you and we can figure out whether or not there's any merit to it whatsoever. We also had the AAC postseason awards, and other than the Memphis Tigers getting rightfully recognized for being the best team in the league, there were still a few things that greatly irritated me. Can't wait to discuss that with you. We'll get into the list. We've got Daniel Jones on the move. Also over at CBS Sports, Matt Norlander came up with the 25 biggest college basketball stars of the century. We've got March Madness announced teams. These have been announced. And then there's another couple things I want to get into if we have time. We'll get into tonight's college basketball card. We'll tell your story. And then we'll get out of here. So you and I, big college basketball guys as well. Also, I'm a big UConn guy, or at least I was the last 2 years. Primarily because they're just the stock that you just rode and rode and rode, and your portfolio kept growing and growing and growing. I have to confess, I think I probably watched 25 minimum UConn games last year. I was not really that aware that Cam Spencer's a legit psychopath until, honestly, he got to the Grizzlies. Because my friend Drew Hill covers the Grizzlies for the Daily Memphian. He had written about it a little during the summer because that was kind of a theme for the summer league team, is that Cam Spencer, man, that guy's crazy. Well, I think that's probably always been there. I don't think he flipped a switch, and that was what brought me to my first question. Was I just not watching enough games on with sound, or does Dan Hurley just suck the oxygen out of everything? You don't notice any other psychopaths on the floor because Dan Hurley's there.
I don't know what you were watching, man. I knew this dude was nuts.
It might have been he was just honestly making me so much money I didn't care.
He talked a lot of smack, and there truly is, and I don't know, maybe this is a bit hyperbolic, but I feel like there's nobody who has embodied their coach in college, or maybe at any level, more than Cam Spencer and Danny Hurley. Danny Hurley is a nut job on the sideline, and Cam Spencer is that. And, you know, I'll say this. The Spencer family is kind of a fascinating story. His older brother was a elite lacrosse player. I believe he won the Heisman Trophy for men's lacrosse. And then was like, you know what? I want to play college basketball. And he went to Northwestern and is, I think, on a two-way with the Golden State Warriors. And then Cam Spencer went to Loyola of Maryland, was playing in the Patriot League.
So I think the origin story of Cam being on their radar is that Santi Aldama played at Loyola.
Yes, he did.
He was his teammate.
Yep. And then he goes to UConn and, you know, wins a national championship and was kind of one of the more glue guys. Obviously not the most talented player, but yeah, they I could only imagine, like, playing youth sports against a Cam Spencer and how intense the kid probably was. But yeah, that is who he is. And you saw it last night with him barking at Kevin Durant after hitting a corner three at the end of the third quarter.
Well, and that kind of brought up a few other things. Number one, why did we have this intense desire to get smack talk out of the, like, whether it be the NFL? Like, if Tyreek Hill absolutely dusts you and he wants to flip the deuces up as he's running backwards into the end zone, why do we care?
Well, I mean, we talked about this after the flag plant, right, with Ohio State and Michigan. And then similarly, we saw it this weekend where I guess Michigan was disrespecting midcourt there for Michigan State and standing on midcourt. I've just always been a believer in don't get your ass kicked and then you won't get smack talk to you, you know? And it's like, or there's a perfect way to respond. It's kind of like, I know I'm taking this off track a little bit, but, you know, broadcasting baseball for 4 years out of college in the minors and just baseball and the unwritten rules have always driven me crazy. And I remember I was doing shows in D.C., and this was, I think, the 2014 season. It doesn't really matter. But Bryce Harper hit a home run off of Hunter Strickland.
Okay.
And absolutely just destroyed this baseball.
The old – it's
– into McCovey Cove.
It doesn't get talked about enough. The sound of a home run off a wooden bat is a different sound in sports, and it should be up there. It doesn't ever get its due. Like, you just – you can hear it, like, almost like, even though it's the crack of the bat, it almost pierces your eardrum.
So he just blasts this ball into McCovey Cove, watches it, as he should.
Admiring his work.
Because he just hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball into a body of water, which is a very challenging thing to do. And over a year later, now granted, the Giants would win that series and win the World Series, but these... And I'm not saying all, but a lot of these athletes are so, I'm trying to think of the right way to define it, but he ends up hitting Bryce Harper like a year and a half later.
Ah, yes.
He was, you know, he showed him up. I'm like, dude, you won the World Series. Who cares? But that's just what baseball is. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I always kind of go back down to like the World Baseball Classic. And when you watch the Latin American countries and how much fun they're having, I'm like, that's what it's supposed to be about, man. Like, they're not showing you up. They're just enjoying playing the sport that they love. So I don't know if that makes sense to where we were kind of starting this conversation.
No, it actually does, because this is kind of the origin. Like,
everyone's so damn sensitive.
I don't even know if it's that.
It's sports, man.
You know what I think it actually is? We're rewarding sore losers. And what we're doing is Durant doesn't like it that Cam Spencer's talking ass to him. It's Kevin Durant and it's Cam Spencer. You tell me which one we're going to remember in 30 years. With all due respect to Cam Spencer, legitimate psychopath, and I love him. Yeah. I'm all here for it.
And Kevin Durant, honestly, I get it. If I'm Kevin Durant, I'm just like, is this really happening? What he should have done is laughed and be like, good for you, man. Like, he should have dapped him up. Be like, good for you.
No, honestly, if you want to, he should just hit him with because it was funny to watch. And as a short guy, I can relate. Like, when you're giving the business to somebody that's significantly taller than you, I've been on the other end of this, even when you're winning the argument and even when you're giving him the business, they just pat you on the head and it's over. Because everyone's like, oh, that's all he had to do. Instead, he didn't like it. And this is the other thing that's so obvious about the Suns right now. They're a miserable watch. Like, look so miserable. Nobody wants to be there, whatnot. And so I get it. But whether it's court storming of the field, look where it all originates. In college basketball, it largely originated with somebody related to Duke. Whether it was Billis, whether it was Seth Davis, it's Coach K got all the brotherhood together, all the acolytes out there that he's placed in media, and he got, we got to get rid of court storming. It's too dangerous. It's fun. And it's the same thing. Like, I'm watching one of the ringleaders in the SEC of wanting to get all these rules changed about storming the field. You'll never guess. It's Alabama. Like, and what my whole thing is, it's like, what we're doing is we're just rewarding the people that are being sore losers. Like, I get it. Alabama, Duke, you don't really get to storm the field. You don't get to storm the court. Like, congratulations. That's the payoff. You get a bunch of titles. You get to win. Like, in the end, it's almost like we're desensitizing everything. And where I can't figure out is, it's one thing when you have the malice at the palace.
Right.
And I can understand if you're David Stern and you're sitting there and be like, we can't have players fighting fans in the stands. All right, I'm with you on that. But then it always just kind of leaps to, people view that as like, oh, well, that's like a sign of like, we can get rid of the things that we don't want. But it's like, who does this harm? Because then everyone always hypocritically does this of either you fine the schools for storming the field, storming the court, or, you know, you fine someone for talking smack, you tee them up, whatever. And then we'll just blast it on replay being like, how great was this? It's just so hypocritical. So is it, they're afraid of if we show any emotion, like, are they afraid that we could affect our corporate bottom line? Is that what's happening? Because I don't understand where all this originates.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I think I like court storming and field storming to an extent. I think the issue that I have at times is that the dumb frat bros get a little too overzealous, right? And they find
Oh, don't
it
worry, like, I've got rules. You ready? You storm the field, you storm the court, guess what? You're entering their territory. And if you're on your phone doing whatever, you know, trying to record yourself, whatnot, you can have your shoulder, you can get a shoulder to the face.
And like, can we keep the lights on? It's a little weird when, like, the new, I guess, deal is we turn the lights off.
It's it like, has to be automated. I think it's like one of those things where it's like when the clock goes zero, because it's like, who's pushing a button to turn the lights off when people are storming the floor? I agree with you 100% on that.
But overall, I'm with you. I do like court storming. I do like field storming. It's kind of one of the unique things about college athletics. You don't do that in the NBA, right? You know, when the Grizzlies beat, you know, the Thunder as an upset, you know, the fans aren't storming the court. It's kind of one of the unique things about college athletics. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, because going back to the baseball thing, I think there's nothing softer, in my opinion, than a pitcher hitting a batter for hitting a home run.
Especially,
there is nothing softer.
Especially
because there's no
now,
repercussions for a base. There's no repercussions for the pitcher.
Especially now that everyone has the DH.
Yes.
I was more open to it when you had to go up there and face the music. But I'm also the guy.
Strike him out. You just got beat. It's called competition. You are throwing a baseball 100 miles an hour. That can be a weapon. And you are so soft because you got defeated. And if I contend that the hardest thing to do in all of sports is to hit a baseball and to hit it far, especially breaking balls. Did you see Paul Skeens and the throw that he had? That's not fair.
I also don't know, because I go back and forth on this. If you've ever seen truly an elite hitter getting an, I always go back and forth on this. Like, what's harder? I think for average player, hitting a baseball is harder, but I swear to God, when you go up against some of these hitters, I'm like, how do you get these guys out? I always flip back and forth. Because, like, I saw Austin Riley played for my dad and played with my brother when they were on travel ball. And I watched Austin as a 17-year-old with a wood bat get absolutely, like, out on his front foot, completely fooled by a breaking ball. He one-armed it off the wall. And I'm like, I just don't even know, like, what you do with that. And, you know, this is, again, this wasn't a major league arm, but all these guys are pretty much college prospects that they're playing against.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how do you get those guys out?
It is, I mean, seeing, and really at any level of sports, seeing a player that is going to be a pro, it's pretty astonishing. And I don't know what sport it pops out the most in, right? You're like, that dude is going to play not only at the next level, but going to be a pro. I don't know what sport it like is so glaring to see.
I think part of it depends on level of competition. So my buddy Tyler Siski, who was in college football coaching, he was at Alabama and he was recruiting Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry.
Have you seen his high school stats?
Well, that's the thing he was telling me. I can't remember if it was 1A or 2A, but Derrick Henry went to a fairly small school, and so it's 1A, 2A high school, and Derrick Henry at that level, it's just unfair. Now, Derrick Henry in 6A would still dominate.
Derrick Henry in the NFL at times, like, is unfair.
You know what I mean? Like, but it's a different... I think part of this depends on in what setting are you seeing him. Like, I think about Brandon Hayward, who played at Carolina, played in the NBA. He played at Brentwood Academy. And Tennessee's a little bit different in that private school is not just, okay, so untalented kids can feel good at sports. Like, it's hot. That's where they're... Think of it. It's very similar to the D.C. Catholic schools. Like, everyone's recruiting. Everyone... Like, that's... It's a high level of competition. But watching him play in that state tournament was not fair. So I think a lot of it depends on... But I think if you would see... Brandon Wright, beg your pardon. If you would have seen him in AAU at, like, Peach Jam, I don't know if it stands out as much. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And I think, like, that's kind of the other thing, but it's... I think the answer has to be basketball or baseball, because the other problem in football is, I've seen guys that are 4- and 5-star guys, and I'm not saying they get bottled up, but if there's, like, one guy, even high school defenses can, like, be like, we got to make sure this guy doesn't absolutely rip us a new one. But when you see that high-level basketball or baseball player, there's really no defense for it.
Yeah, especially if they're, like, a pitcher.
Right.
You're not going to get a hit today.
Yeah, it's like he threw 7 innings. He struck out 19.
My freshman year of high school, we faced a kid by the name of Brett Cecil. He ended up pitching for the Blue Jays for a little bit. And it was somehow, some way, he was playing JV baseball. I don't know how. But it was
probably because, like, he transferred, and that was a time when he couldn't transfer.
Yeah, and he played for DeMatha, which is pretty elite at most sports.
See, but, Catholic school.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I just remember being in there. I'm like, we're not getting a hit today. He's like, all right, well, this was fun. We ain't getting a hit today off this dude. But, yeah, there is something, though, when you see a basketball player especially if they're playing at a little bit of a lower level, it's like, yeah, this is, there's no defense to this.
Right, because, like, you know, even if you try to corral him, it's like, well, he can still get off jump shots. You still can't stay in front. Like, he can pull up from the logo. Like, when you see that kind of guy, I think it has to be one of those two. But, like, the caveat being, like, if you saw Derrick Henry playing essentially 1A football, that would probably not be fair. Because you got
to
be
imagine trying to be like a 210-pound defensive tackle.
Oh,
tackle Derrick Henry.
Some of these schools, like, you know, I would imagine some of these schools probably had like 50 kids on the team in 9th through 12th grade.
Oh, yeah.
Like that would just be unfair. But I don't know. To me, it's just like we're catering to the babies that are whining because they got shown up. And that's like in the end, it's like, all right, don't get shown up.
That's true.
Like we're making policy based on that. It's like because what is the harm of, like, that's the other thing. It's like, we also, when the college basketball, I do think the court storming took a bit of a hit when Filipowski and all the Dukies were crying about how he could have been murdered by some 165-pound Wake Forest, like, you know, science major. Like, he even came out and was like, yeah, faked it. Like, that took a hit, but now we're doing this move where we've now decided we have to have it out of the game, have to have it out of the game. But keep in mind, if you turn into the SEC Network, you can go and see plenty of examples of Tennessee storming the field against Alabama, but God knows, we can't have that. So I just think we're letting like the people that get the field stormed on them, like they don't like it, so we're catering to them. It's like, okay, well, we're going to keep doing this.
Right, and if you're, I don't know what, I saw what Cam Spencer said after the game, and I don't know if Kevin Durant really acknowledged it or whatever.
I don't even know if he talked.
Right, but if you're Kevin Durant, you're not going to like it because you're Kevin Durant and a dude named Cam Spencer just hit a three in your eye. Well, go dunk on him the next possession. Make sure he doesn't do it again. Like, you're Kevin Durant. You stepped up in LeBron's face in an NBA Finals game after he hit a big shot and hit the ultimate dagger. Like, you're elite. You just did it in the summer against Serbia. Like, just make some plays, dude.
And that, I don't know. I mean, it's the other aspect of this that was striking to me. It's
if
like
you don't like it, shut him up. I think that's the biggest thing.
Yes.
Right?
But the other thing is, like, when you watch the Suns, like, yes, they look miserable. But then it just leads you to think about every Durant team after the Warriors kind of feels the same, where there are moments that you're watching them and they feel indestructible, but always at the end, you're just left wanting more. And it's this weird thing with him where it's like he's undeniably one of the all-time greats. Like, if you want to go out and say he's the greatest scorer of all time, fine. I don't think that's an insane take. Like, reasonable minds can differ. But it's just always this kind of you're left wanting a little bit more.
Yeah, it's, and I think it was Simmons who kind of hit on this first, which is, when is Kevin Durant, and he's, look, I've seen interviews with him. I don't know the guy. We, you know, both grew up in Maryland. That's the closest we'll ever be to, you know, being in the same ballpark. And he's a very insightful dude. I really enjoyed hearing from him during the Court of Gold. I thought he had some really good insight there. To your point, he's elite. Probably one of the more unstoppable unicorns we've seen in basketball history. Like a 7-footer that shoots as well as he does.
How about just the handles? Like, this is the other thing that amazes me when you see a 7-footer that like that. It's like just how hard it is to like dribble, you know, when you play with like a 5-year-old's basketball. Like, thinking about like that, to see just how skilled he is, it's unbelievable. And he was awesome last night.
And he continues to be awesome. The dude never seems to be, I don't know if happy is the right word, but satisfied. Like, I get it. You went to Golden State. You won your titles. But, like, you're a smart dude. How did you think that would be received? It was going to be received very negatively because you were up 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals. And
you had a fourth quarter lead in the game 7.
Well, Russell Westbrook tends to pull a Carlton there times too. If you know, you know. And he wasn't happy there. Goes to Golden State. Wins a couple titles. Tears the Achilles. Not happy. Goes to Brooklyn. Well, when you hit your wagon to Kyrie, it's not going to be usually an enjoyable experience. That doesn't work out. And it's just like, he seems just unsatisfied so often there. And look, it's been a disaster of a year for the Phoenix Suns. There's no doubt. Like, they might not make the playoffs.
Well, no, I mean, the real race is, can Phoenix catch Dallas? Or more importantly, can Dallas catch Phoenix going the other direction?
Right.
And I don't know. Like, It's just, it's an interesting career. I think Cowherd said his comp was Kevin Durant is the artist, whereas someone like LeBron is the whole business. And Durant thinks of basketball as an art form rather than just a winning, losing business proposition.
Quick side note, I'm watching the ACC tournament, and this is one of the most disgusting watches I've ever seen in my life.
Well, hang in there.
Notre Dame's offense is just so horrific.
Have you seen the floor at the Big 12 tournament?
Oh, with the 12 just pasted everywhere?
It literally looks like, kids today won't remember this, it looks like you're watching a game on Jefferson Pilot where you think the game's snowing. No, it's just that's the transmission. Like, it's got like the white fuzzy stuff all over it. Like, the floor is like Roman numeral 12, like Louis Vuitton style, all over the floor. And it's just like you watch and you think there's something wrong with your TV. Which brings me to my next point.
All right.
So Brett Yormark today said that he's in favor of expanding the tournament. And this got me thinking about the question that I've posed to you, because it's been very unclear. Where is the tournament expansion originating? Like, who's pushing for this? Because, tell me if you agree, I don't really feel like it's the Big Ten, and I don't feel like it's the SEC.
Are we talking college football?
No, the expansion of the
NCAA. NCAA.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I, for some reason, thought we were talking. Yeah, I don't know. Because I guess from a mathematical standpoint, we're adding more Division I teams every year, and at some point you should continue to add to the dance. But yeah, to your point, SEC teams are going to be just fine. The Big Ten are going to be just fine. Hell, Nebraska was a bubble team and they didn't even make the Big Ten tournament. So I don't know where it's coming from. Is it, and it's not like
A
conference like the Missouri Valley, they're not going to have any say.
So I don't think it's the top end of the sport, and I don't think it's the bottom end of the sport. I think it's the midfield. I think it's the Brett Yormarks of the world, and I think it's the Jim Phillips of the world, the ACC.
ACC is going to get three teams this year.
And I would think that largely the Big East, which has seen a little of its star falling, I would imagine that's where it's coming from, because it doesn't seem to me that it's coming from the big boys, and it doesn't seem like it's coming from, you know, like you said, the Missouri Valleys of the world. I think
because they have no pull.
Correct. But I also think it actually gives me a little hope. I don't think they're getting anywhere with it.
It does seem to me meeting a lot of resistance.
I mean, okay, I do understand. Someone's made the road that you were going down, the mathematical equivalent of, okay, when you consider how many teams there are now in Division I, this should be the amount of representation, and that we've expanded. It's not like the field has always been, you know, in 85 we had 64. I don't remember, was it 2000? When did we add the first four?
2011, because VCU made the run to the Final Four that year.
Okay, it was definitely, we had Dayton before that, but it may have been just the one play-in. It may have been like the 65.
Yeah,
we had 65. Then we go to 65, then we go to 68. And so, I just think the larger problem is, what I think where the resistance is always going to come from is when we're doing exactly what you just did there, which is if anyone happened to watch Nebraska and Iowa on Sunday morning and you realized that's a bubble team, I think everyone collectively is thinking 68 is probably enough.
And I don't know about you, and I know there were people out there, like it's funny because I was a enormous advocate, not that I have any pull, for the expansion of college football. And I think I was right because the 8-7 seed ended up playing for the national championship. And I know the year one of expansion, VCU makes the magical run to the Final Four as an 11 seed. But do we really need 76 teams? Like, I don't think we need it. Like, do we really need Ohio State or Nebraska to get in? Like, yes, last year, if you're a hoop head, like the two of us are, Indiana State probably got screwed. And would I have liked to see, what were they calling, my man with the rec specs last year, Larry Nerd?
No. Well, I remember, what was it? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's right. Yes. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, it would have been cool to see them in, but...
But see, this is the larger point.
Also, just don't mess with the day, man. Like, once we start expanding out, if you start messing with that Thursday and Friday, I'm coming to fight some people.
Well, the other problem was...
Those are sacred days in our society. That Thursday and Friday. 16 games Thursday, 16 games Friday. Don't mess with it.
The only other place that I think this could originate is for coaches. Like, the coaches that know, if you get more teams in the field, I have a better chance of staying. So, like, that I would listen with.
The 100%.
The problem is, we're not talking about putting Indiana State in. We're going to be talking about putting in, all right, let's go through. Either Oklahoma or Texas, Nebraska or Ohio State.
North Carolina.
Like, we're going to be talking about putting the teams that did not earn their way in when they had every opportunity on the planet to earn their way in. We're just going to be backfilling with, I mean, is your Mark's goal to get everyone in the Big 12 in?
Well, probably, because it also means more money, right?
Right.
Every team that makes it in gets more money.
Right, but does Colorado deserve to be in? Like, I get it, they're not really a bubble team, but, like, okay.
No.
Does TCU deserve, like, that's who we're talking about, the TCUs.
No, I'm with you, man. Like, if you're looking at the true bubble teams because of how resumes are built, teams like Texas and Nebraska and Wake Forest are kind of your bubble teams. And look, I give a lot of credit to Arkansas and Indiana for turning it around. Xavier, they got hot down the stretch. And as clunky as it was for Arkansas to lose your first five conference games, I'm fine with them getting in. And they deserve it, right? They won enough games. Yeah, they got embarrassed by South Carolina.
Yeah, the only hesitation I would have is I was there with you until they scored 14 points and a half. And I'm just very curious, if a team scores 14 points and a half, do they deserve to be in the field?
Well, I loved it. I thought that was a great performance by Arkansas on that particular Saturday. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, I'm looking at a bracketologist right now, and he has Ohio State in the field. Ohio State went 17-14 this year.
Like that, and that's like the whole deal. Because to your point, it's like,
and UVA last year, if you remember that, they got in over,
and they played one of the worst basketball games we've ever had to watch.
Oh, it was so bad. I mean, they got absolutely embarrassed by Colorado State and Dayton.
And I mean, the only reason I was happy about that,
23-10.
Like, the only reason I was happy about that was because at least, like, I was like, okay, sweet, that's another Mountain West team that people are going to believe that can win, and they can't. And lo and behold, another winner for your boy. Like, what is the theory? Like, because this is the other thing. It's like, what are we going to do if we expand? Are we making these are all the play-in teams? They're going to play a week early and then play their way in? Are we expanding Dayton? It's like, this is the only way that because I'm with you. The tournament format is pretty much perfect in the sense of You don't have to watch Dayton if you don't want to. You and I are going to watch Dayton, but that's beside the point. So if you want to make like multiple Dayton sites, like if you want to put one in Dayton and then one in Salt Lake City, I don't care, wherever, pick your city. Or Albuquerque. I don't know why. I just think the Pitt and Dayton's arenas look alike. I can't explain that. I just, in my mind, maybe it's the color scheme. I have no idea.
I'm down for more Pitt love, so we can get...
Right. So if you want to put one in Albuquerque and then make that like an all day Tuesday, Wednesday thing. And my deal is, as long as those are the last teams in the field and they're the ones playing their way in, all right, I can live with that. But play it on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then those teams go play Thursday and Friday. But adding another week does not make sense to me. Like, it's the perfect amount of time. It has the perfect rhythm. Don't screw with it.
Yeah, I think someone made that point talking about playoff expansion. And it was about kind of the longevity of the tournament. And right now it's 3 weeks and it's perfect.
And we saw with the college football playoff, like,
yeah, I mean, it dragged. I love the sport, and my favorite team was in the championship. And even I was like, championship's kind of far down the road, isn't it?
I mean, like, it just felt excruciatingly long.
It was a month. I mean, the build-up to the first round was like, yeah, here we go. And then even like the quarterfinals were like New Year's Day. And then it felt like it should have ended when the semifinals happened.
Thursday, Friday. Because I thought Thursday and Friday, and it worked. I think the key for me is, because I think you're the one that convinced me of this, you've got to figure out a way to make this thing end before division weekend.
Correct.
Because once divisional weekend happens, I'm not saying like, oh my God, we went and ran a marathon, but like by the time you get to that Monday, like, you're kind of spent.
And you want to talk about the awesomeness that was divisional round weekend, which is one of the best weekends of the sports calendar. And look, initially I was like all in. I'm like, this is going to be perfect. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And once again, we're kind of unique in the standpoint of, doesn't matter, like, you and I were watching Gonzaga San Francisco at midnight last night. Like, that, we're kind of in the minority, but you want the majority to be a part of it. And what's weird is it just feels like it takes a back seat to everything that the NFL does. So I thought the semifinals were perfect, right? You had a great game on Thursday, a good game on Friday. Like, that should have been the end of it.
No, I'm with you completely. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the AAC has announced their postseason award winners, and I got some complaints. So we'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
March is here, and that means that Zen Sports has launched a new VIP Players Club sweepstakes. The Big Bucket Club sweepstakes. One grand prize winner will earn a $10,000 bonus bet on the NCAA championship game or $5,000 cash. 20 small prize winners will earn a $100 bonus bet on the NCAA championship game or $50 cash. Earn entries on every bet placed in March, every dollar bet in March, and you can earn 10 times the entries on parlay wagers. Plus, if you sign up and you make your first bet with code JEFFTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you will receive 500 bonus entries into the Big Bucket Sweepstakes. College baseball has also been added to Zen Sports for wagering. Plus, Zen Sports is offering a multi-sport parlay profit boost, and you'll get a 15% boost on up to 10 qualifying parlay wagers. See full terms on the Zen Sports app. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Must be 21 or older and located in Tennessee. All right, so we are into college basketball awards season today, Tim. And, oh boy, I'm going to be an equal opportunity offender here. My alma mater's beloved West Coast Conference announced 10 first-team all WCC members. And the American decided to not be outdone. 10 first-teamers, 10 second-teamers, all newcomer team, all freshman team. And, of course, the headline is, and shout-outs to those that deserve commendation, P.J. Haggerty wins Player of the Year, and deservedly so. He was clearly the best player. Honestly, if he wasn't the Player of the Year, it was either him or Dane Danger. But I give full body of work to P.J. Haggerty. Penny Hardaway wins Coach of the Year. They also honored Amir Abdur-Rahim with an honorary Coach of the Year that was announced earlier. I was under confusion of, like, I thought they were just going to make him the Coach of the Year, but he's honorary Coach of the Year. Newcomer of the Year, Dane Danger, which is also, can you be a newcomer as, like, a sixth-year senior?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. Like, I get he's new to the conference, but that is, I mean, I guess in this day and age, you gotta embrace the portal, but it is a little odd that a dude who he is playing his sixth year of college basketball, is that right?
Or fifth? So there's issues. He went to Baylor for like a cup of coffee. Jason Munns, the Tiger basketball beat writer, tells me he's out of eligibility, but there's some pushback of whether or not he is. But when you go and you pull up his roster page,
so it's Baylor, Illinois, and then Memphis this year.
He was a freshman in 2021.
Right. Fall of 21.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. Which is normal.
Right. I just wonder, in this day and age, do we need newcomer of the year?
Probably not.
I mean, right? By the way, when you have 20 first and second team all-conference players, you're going to get honored. Like, do we really need it?
I mean, it's probably a cool plaque.
I honestly, though, this is where my brain goes. Like, who's pushing for this? And, like, I just wonder, like, is it tied to coaches' contracts? Is it tied to, is it agents wanting this? Because the thing that's so, like, so funny to me is you go and you look at all-conference first team. Yaxel Lindenborg, unanimous selection. RJ Felton, unanimous selection. Dane Danger, unanimous selection. P.J. Haggerty, unanimous selection. Atten Wright, unanimous selection. That's the first team. That's five players. What are we doing here? And this is why, like, I am sympathetic to, like, when people are like, well, it's a slippery slope argument. No, this is where it starts. You start by allowing six or seven, and then all of a sudden, we're wound up with 10 guys, first team, all conference.
Well, and I'll just say this, like, the NBA takes a lot of crap, rightfully so, but first team all NBA, it's hard to get on it. It's five spots. And that's why when Luka made it five times under 25 and then got traded, you know, it was pretty surprising. But first team's five, second team's five, third team's five, and that's it. And if you don't get in, tough stuff. And that's why, you know, those players have an opportunity to get the Supermax. Yeah, this is, look, as someone who, there could have been 100 spots on the Centennial Conference, all conference, and your boy wouldn't have made it. I'm all for it and to an extent of like, hey, you know, maybe you deserve a little love, but I don't know. Like you said, five players were unanimous. That's your first
That's
team
the first
right
team.
There. There you go.
And then, like, it also feels like...
I'm good with no positions. I'll say that. Like,
yeah,
I think in this day and
age... I'm totally fine
like,
with that.
Five guards can be your first team all-conference.
Yeah,
like, I'm cool with that. If the five best players should be your all-conference team.
Honestly,
doesn't have to be positions.
The only problem that I have with all-NBA is, like, it's too dictated by position, but we've kind of adjusted that.
Right, we have adjusted a little bit because for forever and a day, like, you'd be like, that dude was third team all-NBA. I was like, well...
They had to pick somebody.
There's no centers anymore, you know?
They had to pick somebody. And so, Tyrese Hunter...
it was like a couple years ago... who was it? It was the, I think it was like Gobert and someone else were like 1-2 in defensive player of the year, and they had to be first and second team all NBA because they were both centers. So there are some tricky things with that, but I'm good with positionless. Let's do five. All right, let me ask you this. Should second team be 5-2 and just honorable mention is the one that you can get like 100 on?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. If you want to make the honorable mentions, because like it's either that, like to me, it's like do first, second, third team, five on each, and then honorable mentions. Or you can do first and second team, and if you want to have a bunch of honorable mentions, I'm totally fine with that. Because we all know the difference of honorable mentions. Like, it should be recognized, but at the same time, it's like you weren't quite there.
That was me in high school.
I mean, to me, it's like with Memphis, it's not as egregious as it was with the WCC, because clearly what happened in the WCC is they were just honoring too many St. Mary's players, and I'm sure...
As they should.
Right. By the way, they went 17-1. But I also imagine Gonzaga, which has a lot of pull in that conference, although why are you catering to Gonzaga right now? They're leaving you. That seems to be annoying. I had somebody proposition me, and it's someone I respect, so I don't think... It wasn't just like someone angry on Twitter. Is this a sign that the league is upset about Memphis's flirtation with the Pac-12? And I would point out, if that is indeed the case, that's sorry, because Memphis did not flirt with the Pac-12. The Pac-12 was the one that screwed that up. They made it public. They were trying to... They took like a activist approach of make this very public, messy, and try to force somebody into taking a bad deal. Memphis was ending up being like on the short end of the stick. They got offered a terrible deal, and then they got all their fans riled up because they thought about going to a better league. And they didn't go. And they were very transparent. We did not go because this was a bad deal.
Which I think is kind of, I mean, if you're the AAC, you'd be like, sweet, thank you. Right?
I think the AAC, you also have to remember this. You got a new commissioner, and he does not seem to have any political power. You have a bunch of new members, and you also have varying different levels of seriousness from schools. Like, it feels like there's some schools that are trying to, like, bring other teams back because they can't compete financially, and then there's other schools like Memphis and Tulane. They're like, no, this doesn't need to have a cap on it. Like, if we're going to be a part of the big boy world, we got to act like a big boy.
I tweeted this out last night. Do you know the last time Gonzaga did not reach the WCC championship game? 1997.
Yeah, I was going to say it's got to be
20.
I can tell you this,
consecutive years
from 2007 on. I know they didn't miss.
Now, it also did start to get rigged for them. I can't remember when, because everyone always laughs at the Sun Belt for how they do their tournament. I was like, you know who originated that, right?
Oh, have I done my rant on this show yet? I don't think I have.
By all means.
I won't.
That's what this space is for.
I won't go too crazy. Every conference should absolutely rig its conference tournament.
If you're a one-bid league.
It benefits you as a one-bid league to rig it for your best teams. And I'm all for it. Why the hell did we play 2.5 months of round-robin hoops so that the 8 seed can play as many games as the 1 seed? It's never made sense to me. And I get it. We've talked a lot about the almighty dollar from a television standpoint. And a lot of these conferences want to go and get the buck from Asheville, North Carolina, or Pensacola, Florida. But watch on Saturday the America East Final, which will probably be at Bryant, and how great that atmosphere is going to be. Watch tonight the NEC and the Patriot League. It's maddening to me, and like, shouts to Martin Inglesby in Delaware for this magical run to the CAA championship game here tonight in that conference, but it doesn't really benefit your conference to have the 12 seed winning it, because they're probably going to go get their ass kicked in the NCAA tournament. And you as a conference make more money if the best team goes to the dance and wins a game or two. So the reason that's kind of what I've always led to is like, you need to rig the field for your better teams because they earned it. And also it's going to be beneficial to your conference. And if the Sun Belt, and you mentioned it, it was like this beautiful ladder. You had to win 7 games in 7 days if you were like 14th place. I love it because you suck during the regular season. That's your own fault. So I just, like, tonight is the CAA championship. It's UNC Wilmington versus Delaware. There's going to be no atmosphere there. None. And I never understood why these conferences have not, you know, reseeded, double buys, triple buys. You need to benefit the best teams. And for Gonzaga and St. Mary's, they are the two best teams, and they deserve the triple buy to the semifinals.
Okay, though, conversely, because I do agree with you, should every team in the Big Ten and the SEC have a chance, even if it's to the point of you win 7 games in 7 days.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. I think they've ran into like a, oh my God, we were not accounting for this many teams, right? Like,
well, honestly, what I started thinking is, I wonder if, okay, the conferences got so big so fast that the arena wasn't available.
That's also certainly a possibility. The SEC, everyone plays, correct?
Everyone plays in the SEC.
All 16.
Yep.
The ACC, 3 teams missed. The Big Ten, 3 teams missed. The hilarity is that NC State is not playing in it, which is just comical to me. But yeah, it's, I mean, and the AAC kind of falls into this as well, where, I mean, Memphis gets what, a double bye?
Memphis.
But so do three other teams.
They basically have the same format that the SEC has with a little bit fewer teams, where your top 4 teams get double byes, so they'll play Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And they don't reseed either. And I'm
correct.
Like, Memphis should play, after the first 2 rounds, Memphis should play the worst team. They're the best team. They shouldn't. They should play the worst remaining team.
Well, and here's where it really starts to matter. Memphis is in a spot that it has not been in a very long time, which is they can lose on Friday, and right, it doesn't matter. They're still getting their name called on Selection Sunday. I still think that people haven't adjusted that the committee's not really doing a ton of, they're not really changing everything based upon what happens in conference tournaments. They're basically 100%. Saying like,
Lenardi, I think, has said that like the committee just is done on like Friday night.
Right. They may be based on bracket rules. So like, for instance, 1 year I covered the Ole Miss team with Marshall Henderson that won the SEC tournament. Because they beat Florida in the final, they went from going to Dayton and they moved them to the 12 line. And they moved someone from that 12. So that's kind of what happens. It's usually like, all right, it has to follow the bracket rules. But if you're Memphis and you're in this weird spot of, we have a
basketball results resume that is extremely good, but we have a metric resume that's not very good. If you go and you lose to Wichita State or South Florida on Friday, even though you and I can make the argument that's probably better for them, all right, come back around, like that's not playing another 2 days of basketball. But it's like, could that bump them down another seed line? I don't think the answer is, but it's like, the problem is because you have a league where there is nothing to begin. It's not like winning that game. It's not as if, like, for instance, last Saturday, whether or not it's right, Texas and Oklahoma felt like a loser leaves town match. Who knows if it'll be true, but it did feel like that. It's not like if Memphis wins, they're going to get some benefit. If they win, it's just another nothing win, no change, whatnot. And so all you're doing is you're putting your best team in a position to only hurt itself.
So let me ask you this. Two questions. One, as a Memphis fan, do you want them to win the conference tournament? If we're under the belief, and I am, I don't think the AAC tournament hurts them, and I don't really know if it helps them. Like, are they entrenched on, what is it, the seven probably right now? Six or seven?
I mean, they are going to be the most fascinating team on Sunday. You could tell me they get an eight or a nine, or you could tell me they get a six. Because, like, if you look at the WOB, which is the new metric,
wins above bubble,
which, by the way, created by a gambler. If you look at that, they should be about a six seed.
By the way, the only way a 12-13 game should end, a ridiculous foul call was just called on Pitt with 0.5 of a second to go on a putback, and Notre Dame has two free throws to try to win the game.
There you go.
And they winning at the free throw.
Hey, that's the real Elam ending.
Jeff Capel looks none too pleased over there.
All right, and then what was your second question?
Okay, do you want Memphis to win? And then second was, do they win?
So if you look at it from a conference perspective, the conference doesn't want Memphis to win. Their only chance to get a second team in is to have Memphis lose, because Memphis is in. If you're Memphis, I think most fans, they're just conditioned of, if they lose one of these games, it's going to hurt them. Even though you and I don't know if it's true and suspect it's not true, I still think fans are going to be conditioned to say, well, while we're here, let's just win the thing.
I'm just thinking as a gambler, should I bet on someone else to win this conference tournament? However, North Texas's odds were not very high, so I was like, I was hoping I could get like 3-1 on North Texas. But I think if I had to guess right now, if I had to pick Memphis or the field, I feel like I would take the field. Just because if they get to Sunday, and you're right, like once you get there, let's just win the damn thing, right? But man, you're going to be facing teams that are just, I mean, that's their only hope, right?
Yeah.
That they are done if they don't beat you.
Yep.
And is Memphis going to match that level of, I mean, look, everyone knows this. Memphis is the far superior team in the league. And when they're focused, they are going to beat the crap out of anybody in the league. By the way, that was not a foul call. That was so bad. Oh, my God. Oh, man. That is a horrible foul to end a game on. But, yeah, I do wonder if, you know, it's like the SEC. Did you hear what Cal said?
I did. I do wonder, though. It's like, I think Cal might be in the position of, you might want to.
Don't lose to South Carolina, buddy. Again.
I would also say, like, don't. I wouldn't leave it up to the judges. I'd maybe win.
But if I'm Bruce Pearl.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie. But since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
So, I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.